What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over on at Locked On Bears, too. Unfortunately, not a very nice win. Not a very nice game, let's say that, for the Bears. And I don't know which one frustrated you more watching last night, the Bears or the Bulls. But check out our friends at Locked On Bears. Matt, what's going on? How was your weekend?
Other than that Bears game, it was pretty great. Look, I think Bulls fans, Bears fans, us Chicago folk, nobody was really expecting a win in either game, Bulls Heat or Bears Eagles. I think we were all expecting the Bears to get trounced, which they did. It's unfortunate. We're now hearing that apparently Hallis Hall reeks of rotten fish today. A sad Monday at Hallis because apparently they served sushi towards the tail end of last week, but they didn't dispose of it properly. So now Hallis Hall reeks of rotten sushi, which to me just seems very appropriate. And as bad as the Bulls are doing and as bad as they played Friday and Sunday, I guess we haven't heard any similar reports of the Advocate Center being uninhabitably stinky. So I guess there's that.
Yeah, Omer Sheik's not hanging out at Hallis Hall, is he?
Not that I know of, no.
All right, well, we're going to jump into the embarrassment that was Bulls basketball this weekend. That includes the absolute ass beating that the Warriors gave the Bulls on Friday night, as well as the Heat turning a 7-point quarter into a 193 win against the Bulls. I have to start the show off like this because I think this, out of anything that I've watched Bull, you know, over the past decade, I think this weekend was probably the most embarrassing weekend for Bulls basketball, for the Bulls front office at that point, that we've seen, and not even just locally, because yeah, there's been a lot of embarrassing moments locally that we've harped on the Bulls for, but nationally, the Bulls just took a beating on Friday.
They really did. I mean, I guess you can credit them for managing 94 points because we've seen the Bulls struggle to hit 80 in plenty of games this season. And I mean, a good amount of that came in garbage time. The Bulls put up 28 in the fourth when this one was long gone. But I mean, surrendering 143 points, that's ugly. Yes, the Warriors are a very potent offense, the most efficient offense in the NBA, or one of them. But 143. I mean, they put up 45 in the second quarter alone. That's pretty gross. I mean, you and I gave a little bit of a glimpse of a preview of this game in our Friday show, and we were both expecting the Bulls to get blown out and probably the Warriors to even cover that ridiculously large line of whatever it was, 18.5, 19.5. And they certainly did that, and then some. I believe I saw that this was the Bulls' third biggest margin of defeat in franchise history, 49.
Unbelievable.
I mean, really, what more can you say about it? It's the Bulls and the Warriors are should be in different leagues right now. That's how far apart the talent gap is.
So that's okay. So with everything that happened on Friday, that's where I want to start then, because you brought that interesting point up. Is without Draymond Green, without Kevin Durant, the Warriors are still, they look like a complete, like they're in a completely different league than the Bulls are. So that bars the question. This Bulls roster is not even in the same realm. You can't even talk about the same realm of possibility of the Bulls being competitive against a team like this with the roster that you have. And for the most part, there are four or five guys that the front office really believes in as part of this rebuild. And it begs the question, okay, now we look at a rebuild. Does it give you any type of anxiety, any type of fear that this Bulls team, this rebuild is going to be way longer than you think it's going to be? Because to be honest, dropping a Zach LaVine in this lineup, plus dropping a top three pick in this lineup next year, I don't see the Bulls being anywhere near an NBA level competitiveness with top teams like this in the league. So for me, it scared me in terms of holy shit, this is going to be a longer rebuild than I think a lot of us have thought.
Well, and a part of that, a very important factor, is what the Bulls do in the 2018 draft, and if they manage to add themselves a superstar or at least a star-level talent to this roster with a top-five pick, ideally a top-three pick, and there are plenty of interesting names. But as far as, you know, does losses like this against the elite NBA teams concern me with, well, maybe it's a longer rebuild than I originally thought? No. When they traded Jimmy Butler on draft night, I said to myself, okay, I don't love the pieces they got in return. It could be worse, but this is going to take a minute. This is going to take at least three seasons to develop, hopefully, Markkanen, and let LaVine turn into a quality, hopefully star-level veteran in his prime years. He's still very young. And hopefully see Chris Dunn mature into a usable point guard. That's going to take time. And whether, you know, it also depends on how you qualify what being a successful rebuild means and how long it takes for a rebuild to be deemed a success. Are you talking about getting out of the basement and fighting for a playoff spot again, one through, you know, whether it's, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8? Obviously, it's not like the Bulls are going to be leapfrogging people and all of a sudden become one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference in a matter of a couple of seasons. It's going to take time. But the Warriors are far and above a lot of NBA teams out there. It's not just right. The Bulls who get crushed by the Warriors because they're so much better than a lot of teams.
And that's the funny thing is, there's been conversation across the NBA talking about specifically, brings up a team like the Memphis Grizzlies and what they're trying to do with Marc Gasol and possibly, you know, trading him away to try to get these assets. And they had this conversation and it specifically went in terms of market value and the business side of basketball. And the Bulls and the Memphis Grizzlies, obviously in two completely different markets. The Bulls are in a top market in the United States, top market in the world. And so it's a little bit different in terms of what you would do as far as deeming success in a rebuild. Obviously, Bulls fans have their bar set at championships, and I don't blame them, and I have my bar set at championships too. So in terms of whether or not you're going to rate this rebuild in terms of success off of whether or not the Bulls are competitive in 3 or 4 seasons, or do you want to rate them in terms of are they going to be able to compete for a championship in 3 or 4 years? The latter, absolutely not. At this point, dropping a top three pick into what the Bulls have right now, plus the surrounding pieces that Garpax has some type of confidence in that they're going to be a legitimate part of this, I just don't have any confidence that that's where it's going to be. I think it's going to be a very, very long time, 5 to 7 years, before the Bulls even think about competing for a championship.
Another factor is, yeah, we're worried about these young players and the young player development, but what is a very important element to that is coaching. And I don't know about you, Jordan. Right now, I am not convinced, you know, a little bit of the way into year three of the Fred Hoiberg. And again, we've talked about how the fact that his first two seasons at the helm, he didn't really have the pieces he wanted. But I still am not convinced that Fred Hoiberg is an NBA coach. And you mentioned the Grizzlies and the struggles they've gone through this season thus far. And that's the biggest NBA news of today, Monday. The Grizzlies just fired David Fizdale. Ree Woj, who, you know, broke that news around 3:15, 3:30 today, which, you know, my first thought when I saw that the Grizzlies fired David Fizdale is, would I rather have David Fizdale than Fred Hoiberg? Because I think that answer is a pretty resounding yes. There are a lot of guys I'd rather have than Fred Hoiberg running and orchestrating this Bulls rebuild.
Yeah, and that's another thing with Fred Hoiberg, too. There was news that came out today on Monday, and this is going to kind of transition us away from what we were just talking about. But since we're on the Fred Hoiberg topic, they talked about Nico and Bobby together again. So Nico Mirotic is back practicing with the team again. There was quotes that were said that they haven't communicated at all. Bobby and Nico haven't talked at all. And basically what the question that was given to Fred Hoiberg and some of the other guys was like, how are they going to mend this if they end up having to communicate on the court? And basically the answer was, well, hopefully that Bobby and Nico have to communicate on some type of level when they're playing, when Nico does come back. And hopefully that ends up mending things and they can transition to that off the court. And it's like, are you, you got to be kidding me. So the Bulls are, the Bulls and Fred Hoiberg specifically think that if Bobby and Nico can't get into a room before Nico's ready to play, that they're just going to figure this out by playing on the court? Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, that'll go well. I mean, this Bulls team is plagued by idiotic turnovers already, as it is. We don't need to... I mean, that being said, it's probably very unlikely that we'll see Nico and Bobby share the court because they play the same position. It's, you know, they'll be in different elements of the rotation. And neither of them is going to take the starting job away from Lauri Markkanen. So if Nico does actually throw on a jersey and get out there and is, you know, at least for a month now, between now and when he can be traded at the January 15th deadline, or the first day that he can be traded a month before that deadline. I mean, I don't see Nico and Bobby sharing the court. It's a ridiculous thing for Hoiberg to continue saying, like, well, hopefully we'll continue to work this out. Paxton saying, you know, hopefully time heals all wounds, et cetera, et cetera. Nico still hasn't even talked to Bobby Portis, and they are theoretically on the practice floor together. When it comes to games, I don't see how they can share the floor. Based on what we've heard from Nico and his camp, I don't see them being able to sit on the same bench, share the same sideline. I think that this is still something that they're kind of trying to gloss it over and sweep it under the rug as, well, hopefully time will solve this. And eventually they'll start communicating because they won't have a choice and they'll have to. Everything we've heard from Nico is, I don't want to talk to him and I don't want to play with him. That hasn't changed.
And with that, then it's like, okay, I'm with you that I still don't see a scenario in which both of these guys can be on an NBA floor playing in an NBA game together without speaking to each other, getting in a room and talking to each other. Like, that would be the biggest bonehead move by the front office in Fred Hoiberg in the last, what, I don't know, probably 2 weeks. Like, I mean, there's so many bonehead moves that they've made. It just wouldn't make any sense. And like you said, the fact that this whole team is built around the meaning of culture and like, oh, this rebuild's got to be about building culture within. Well, sticking two guys out there that don't like each other that have to play on the same team against another, like, that's not going to work at all. So I think I'm still in the same camp as you, is that that Nico and Bobby won't play on the same team. As long as one of them's still here, I think it's going to take till January 15th. But who knows? The Bulls love to surprise us. Back to the Warriors and the Bulls game. Because a certain someone has come back, and we said it before. We said it on Friday's episode before Steve Kerr even announced it, that Jordan Bell, it would be likely that Jordan Bell was going to start against the Bulls. It would be the ultimate petty troll move for Steve Kerr, and it worked out. He told Jordan Bell after their game against San Antonio that, you know, keep it under wraps, but you're going to start against the Bulls on Friday. And the Warriors did have a back-to-back. That's why they rested Draymond. But this is a perfect scenario for Steve Kerr to let Jordan Bell shine. And he did exactly that and trolled the Bulls completely.
Yeah, the greatest troll was Jordan Bell making the, you know, the cash money symbol as he was making his way onto the court during starting lineups, because obviously that is a not so subtle nod to the $3.5 million in quote cash considerations. And Bell had a great comment after the game, like, yeah, you know, I just wanted them to, think about those cash considerations and what they were up to while I'm out here starting. I mean, you got to give credit to Bell for trolling when the opportunity presents itself. And as you mentioned, he had a nice game, just 7 points, but chipped in across the box score, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 6 blocks for Jordan Bell in this laugher against the Warriors. Kudos to Kerr for, you know, throwing him into the starting lineup when the Warriors are quote-unquote shorthanded. And Bell just kind of fit right in, and the Warriors cruised. I mean, it was predictably ugly, but it was still ugly.
A plus 20 in the box score, and I saw a stat come up on Twitter during the game that the Warriors' offensive rating is 20 points higher when Jordan Bell is on the court rather than when he's off the court. Warriors fans across the board have been asking why he hasn't been playing, why he hasn't been on the court. Like we had talked about, he was only averaging between 7 and 10 minutes a night. Came out, showed the Bulls up, that's for sure. 6 blocks. 6 damn blocks. Robin Lopez, Chris Dunn, Denzel Valentine twice, Quincy Pondexter, and Bobby Portis got all a taste of Jordan Bell and what he was up to. And you know what? That's what I said. Good for Jordan Bell. Rub it in the Bulls' face. And he specifically, like, he was getting egged on by the media and to answer these questions. I mean, like, they started the post-game presser with asking him which of the 6 blocks was his favorite. The money signs were great. This ultimately goes back to just a straight-up embarrassment to Garpax. Like, this is what they get. They have to reap this percussion of taking that $3.5 million and trading away that pick, and this is what you get. And you have to reap that. And now nationally, not just locally, where the Bulls are just constantly, you know, Bulls fans are constantly pressing the fire Garpax, and I'm with them 100%. And now nationally, we get to see it. People across social media just absolutely destroying the Bulls. All the videos that were coming up, the Jordan Bell's blocks, his money signs everywhere. I hope Garpax was sitting in front of a computer just looking through all of that, or they got a chance to at least look through all of that, because it's well-deserved, because it's just one of the most idiotic moves that they've ever made, and it's coming to fruition now.
And again, it's not necessarily that it was Jordan Bell specifically, and that's something right. that we talked a lot about in our show last week, and that the Bulls fans need to appropriately address their anger and frustration with the whole Jordan Bell thing, and it was not the fact that the Bulls drafted him and then traded him. But as far as the frustration of the failure of the front office, it's not using that second round pick to take a chance and try to get a young, talented guy to add to this rebuild, but instead valuing money over a player. And that absolutely deserves to be trolled. It just so happens that Jordan Bell is the guy, and it just so happens that he got an opportunity to start for the team that is the defending champs. It's you know, they're all details. Some of them matter, some of them don't. But the crux of the matter for the Bulls fan base and the Bulls front office appropriately getting ragged and dragged through the mud on social media on Friday is the fact that this guy's rubbing it in their face that they made this, what most would agree is a bonehead move, to take cash over a player when you're starting a
And that's the biggest thing. And that's like what people don't understand. People are angry at us from Friday's episode because apparently we were defending Garpax's decision to take the $3.5 million and find ways to justify it. When the hell were we ever doing that? And when the hell did we ever do that? We never did.
I mean, I was offering the reasons in which it was justifiable on, you know, from their perspective.
Exactly.
Needing to pay Rajon Rondo to walk away, needing to pay Dwayne Wade to walk away. The $3.5 million is useful. And I also highlighted to some Bulls fans who might not have been aware that was the maximum that the Bulls could have gotten from the Warriors in such a trade. That is the NBA's legal limit for such a trade, $3.5 million. And we don't see it all that often. So, yeah, there was some devil's advocate being played there to say, just so you know, that's what was going on. And also, be sure you understand why you should be upset. Don't just yell, oh, my God, they drafted Jordan Bell and traded him. That's it. That was the extent of our defense of Gar in that last
episode. Not even defense. It's literally why they did it. It's why they did it. They wanted the cash.
It's just an explanation
of
the details.
Yeah, and it's like people throwing it at us like we are defending them. We're not defending them. Do you honestly think me and Matt would rather have the $3.5 million because they could buy out Rajon Rondo, they could pay Cameron Payne, and not see a guy like Jordan Bell out there? Or even for the matter of the fact, whoever the Bulls would have taken with that second round pick, whoever, I would have rather taken the player, and we've stated that multiple times here. So I don't know why people just continue to say like, oh, Garpax, yeah, you guys defending them, taking it. No, take that idea out of your head. Most of all, this whole Jordan Bell thing, I'm just so glad he doesn't play in the Eastern Conference, because this would be a storyline and we'd have to get embarrassed by him more than twice a year. So for the fact that he embarrassed the Bulls, they rightfully deserved it. This is probably the lowest point that the Bulls can be at in terms of a fan base, in terms of embarrassment across the NBA. This was a low point. So now let's transition to something that was a high point and some sad news that came out on Friday. Right after we published our episode, this always happens, and if you haven't been a listener to us, the Debatables, when we were recording the Debatables for a year's stretch, every single time me and Matt recorded, there would be a story that would break literally 30 minutes after we would publish our episode. So the trend continues as I Locked On Bulls.
Of course. It's all about that timing. We're great with the timing of breaking stories right after we record. Although
hey, that's okay, though.
As we get into this conversation about Rose, the first thing I want to say, Jordan, is that to me it seemed like people, as far as, you know, stories that quote unquote break and breaking news, to me this seemed way overblown. Like, this all started with a report from, I'm pretty sure it was Dave McMenamin of ESPN who covers the Cavs, and then Woj chipped in about how Derrick Rose is not with the team. He's currently trying to get healthy from his most recent injury, an ankle injury, and that he is, you know, whatever the phrase was, like, thinking over his NBA future or something along those lines. And everybody immediately freaked out and was like, oh my God, Derrick Rose is retiring. And there were no further details that came from that initial report. It was just, he's currently not with the team and injured, and he's thinking about his NBA future. And there was another specific quote, you know, that they cited a source or whatever saying, like, the continuous injuries have started to weigh on him mentally and it's frustrating. Well, friggin' duh. I'm sorry. Why is that breaking news? The guy has had one of the saddest, most frustrating, long laundry list of injury history since he burst onto the scene as the youngest MVP in league history. You're going to tell me it's breaking news that he's frustrated with the multiple injuries he's dealing with? I didn't get that as a quote-unquote breaking story.
Yeah, and however you want to feel about Derrick Rose, I guess how I felt was reminiscent about the times he had with the Bulls and whatever his future is going to be, whether he decides to retire or not. I can understand it from a mental aspect that, like, being at the top of your game, being so elite your entire life, and then not only two, but three devastating injuries to a player at the top of his game like Derrick Rose, that can take a toll on you mentally. And we talked about it when he was here in Chicago. There was also a lot of factors that rubbed Bulls fans and some Bulls media the wrong way, and maybe he was just misunderstood, and the more you look back at it, maybe that was the case as well. But if you're going to look at the entirety of Derrick Rose, I don't feel completely guilty. I don't feel completely bad. Because at the end of the day, Derrick Rose has the money. Are we just going to completely gloss over the trial as well? Like, there's little things in here that, okay, you can be sad about him as an NBA player, but don't be sad about it as a person, like, to an extent. Don't be sad about it as a person. At least that's how I feel, because he's got the money, and there's also some other stuff that surrounds Derrick Rose that isn't so great either. So
yeah, it just astounded me, the amount of commentary, neutral, good and bad, that came out about D. Rose from, you know, from a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter, who, whether they were lifelong Rose defenders while he was in town and beyond and wished him well in New York and now are wishing him well in Cleveland, people that soured and turned on D. Rose even before the sexual assault allegations came up while he was with the Knicks last year, people who just, you know, trashed him for not playing, not coming back when the Bulls were in the playoffs in 2013, when he was, quote, medically cleared to play by the team doctors, all these, like, the spectrum of Derrick Rose love and Derrick Rose hate in Chicago has always fascinated me. It is, some people will defend him until their last breath and then continue to defend him from their grave. And some people were so quick to write him off after he had the first setback when he tore his meniscus after his recovery from the ACL. And some people wrote him off even before that when he didn't want to come back and play in the playoffs after taking a full season off. And all of that Derrick Rose chatter just came rushing back to the forefront of Bulls Twitter because of this little silly report that he's away from the team and thinking about his NBA future. To me, it was just so overblown, and it reminded me how crazy it is that for a guy who was Chicago's native son and seen as the savior of the Bulls, going to bring the Bulls back to the NBA mountaintop and all these things, his career has just been so weird and full of ups and downs. And the diversity of opinion on Rose is just
It's incredible what one guy can do in terms of fans. And I said this on Twitter on Friday, too. I said, Derrick Rose has the strongest fan base the internet has ever seen. He has guys come out no matter what. You could say the littlest thing about Derrick Rose, and you will have Derrick Rose stans, Derrick Rose fans, just coming at you mercifully on Twitter. It's happened to me before, and anybody who's covered Derrick Rose or had criticism of Derrick Rose, you've seen it before. And it's not all criticism either, because like I said, going back to what Derrick Rose did for Bulls fans, specifically if you can think about any single point in Derrick Rose's career while he was with the Bulls, he made some of the best memories as a Bulls fan I've ever had. I point specifically to the game in which they played Cleveland. He was coming back after his injury. It was kind of his last hurrah with the Bulls, and he hit that bank in game-winning three over LeBron James to take that 2-1 lead. That's by far and above my favorite memory with the Bulls of recent history, and I still get goosebumps every time I watch it. So there's always good feels that go with Derrick Rose, too. Another thing, too, is I went back and watched when he first signed his Adidas contract, his shoe deal, and I thought something that a lot of people didn't note is that Derrick Rose in his statement wasn't talking about the money that he was making or the impact that it was going to have on him as a basketball player. He directly transitioned it to where he came from, and he said he was so blessed. He started crying in the interview, if you remember it at all. He started crying just saying, you know, it's crazy and it's a true blessing that a guy from Inglewood, just a guy like me, could grow up and accomplish this much and could be here at this moment, signing this contract, doing these things. I think it's incredibly humbling when you listen to some of the things back. And for the most part, I think people, when Derrick Rose does decide to be done with the basketball, he'll look at some of these things, and there's arguments on both sides. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can have discussions about whether or not you criticize Derrick Rose for the things that he did. And there's also things that maybe he was just misunderstood about that. But I thought him signing that contract, going back and watching and like re-listening to some of the things that he said, he was talking about social issues in Chicago before it was a thing with athletes, really. And I think that rubbed people the wrong way too. And I'm not saying it rubbed me the wrong way at all, but it's situations like that. I think Derrick Rose was misunderstood, and you see a lot of that now, and it's like, he was talking about things like that before any of this was popular.
Back in the days when I was a more vocal Rose defender, and this was before being traded to New York, before all the sexual assault allegations, which, you know, look, it is innocent until proven guilty in this country, and Rose was not convicted of anything, but there was some stuff in that trial that he said that was really unfortunate and definitely did not present him in a positive light. Things like saying, like, we men, when explaining certain behavior about he and his friends having, like, you know, this like orgy or whatever it was with one woman, that didn't come off well. Saying that he couldn't really define what consent meant, like, yeesh, like stuff that just made your skin crawl. And that was just a really, like, unfortunate example of how Derrick Rose has never been good with words. And that is always what got him into trouble. Before, he was on a stand in a sexual assault trial. And before, he was the most hated player in Chicago sports for all of the injuries. And it was always the fact that Derrick Rose would put his foot in his mouth and not on purpose.
Yeah, no, I don't blame Derrick Rose for that.
He's not an eloquent guy. And one of the biggest things that got people pissed off, you know, the first one was, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, be sore. I don't want to have sore knees while I'm watching my son graduate from high school. And I don't want to have sore knees while I'm sitting in my business meetings long after I've retired. That rubbed fans the wrong way, understandably. What the hell was Rose thinking when he said that? Who the hell knows? Derrick Rose doesn't know half the shit that he says. But the other one that was probably even pissed people off more so than the sore knees talk was in the media day before 2015-16 season, his final season in Chicago, where he started talking about looking forward to free agency in 2017, right? And saying, you look around the league, you look at all the money people are getting with these crazy new max deals, and I want some of that action. And Bulls fans all said, wait a minute. You've barely seen the court for the last several seasons. You're a shade of your former self. Shouldn't you be worried about getting your game back on track and not about free agent money? But that was not Derrick Rose talking. That was his brother, Reggie Rose. And any Bulls fan who doesn't know that is an idiot. You can knock him for listening to his brother. And those are Reggie Rose's words, and there is no doubt in my mind. And that's why, long and short of it is, Rose has never been good talking to the media, interacting with fans, whether it's, you know, behind a mic at a podium or in any element of his public life. He is just a foot in mouth person because, non-apologetically, he's not very smart. It's unfortunate, but he's not very smart and he's not very well spoken. So that's so much of all the shit that made Chicago fans mad at Derrick Rose while he was here. Just the dude doesn't know how to talk.
And see, that's the thing that I wanted to wrap this up with. I don't blame Derrick Rose for any of that. For any of that in terms of not being good with the media and not knowing how to talk. I think his biggest regret and his biggest mistake was the people that surrounded him. Think about the people that he surrounded himself with. Like you said, Reggie Rose, his brother, BJ Armstrong. These guys weren't looking out for the best interest in what Derrick Rose was doing. It was more so a who can cash in first on his. And we always talked about how Derrick Rose seemed like it was a business model more than a passion to win or a passion to bring a championship to Chicago. And a lot of that I blame on the people that he surrounded himself with. And I just think to myself, had he had more support and people to guide him in a better way, there would have been better circumstances. Now, you can't take away the injuries either because that takes a toll mentally too. So there was just a plethora of things that happened in Derrick Rose's career that you can point to positively or negatively. And I think the final thing is like you said, to gloss over some of the things that he said in the trial while he wasn't charged on anything, some of the things were just.
And I think, you know, that goes back to, you know, my main point about this, which is it's fascinating. Of all of the famous athletes who have come and gone in this great sports city, there are perhaps none more polarizing than Derrick Rose when it comes to how the city and its fans feel about him. Because I saw things as far to one end as, I don't care if Derrick Rose is retiring, we shouldn't be remembering the good times, screw him, he's a rapist, he should burn in hell, and I will defend Derrick Rose till my dying day. He, you know, was one of the greatest things that has happened to the Bulls organization, and I'll love him forever, and everything in between. And he's been gone for over a year now, and Bulls fans, whether negative or positive, still feel that strongly about Rose. And it all came to the forefront again with this little blip on the radar. It's crazy.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're on Dash Radio tomorrow, Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app, and on the Nothing But Net channel. We are Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. We will see you tomorrow.